What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Saudi Arabia's billion-dollar serve to the tennis world, the sports washing play, and the upside for players even if it goes nowhere. Pro tennis coach Brad Gilbert joins us from Indian Wells.
If they don't have this offer right now from Saudi Arabia, maybe this doesn't wake up the Grand Slams or wake up the other tournaments to get something going.
And how TikTok creators are managing risk. As lawmakers push for their divest or ban bill on the Hill, dadager to TikTok stars Charli and Dixie D'Amelio is getting ready, just in case.
We're in a very fortunate position. Our run with TikTok's been great. I do not want to see it get banned, but it could happen. And if it does, we're already planning accordingly.
Those stories, plus United Airlines amid Boeing's issues, turning to rival Airbus for planes. And Bernie Sanders, the Vermont senator, pushing for a 32-hour work week.
It's the silliest thing that you've ever heard, is it not? You love the work.
I do like a 7-day work. I like an 11-day work week.
It's Friday, March 15th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. We want to take a look at the U.S. equity future.
First up today on the podcast, a recap. It has been a big week for economic data. On Monday, a New York Fed survey showed long-term consumers expect higher inflation. Tuesday, the Labor Department released Consumer Price Index data. The broad measure of costs for goods and services rose 3.2% from a year ago, which was higher than expected. Then on Thursday, the Producer Price Index data. That's the measure of prices at the wholesale level. That metric jumped 0.6% on the month, double what was expected. It was some hot data, which means the Fed will likely cool it on the speed they're approaching their next rate cut. The Fed convenes for its next meeting on Tuesday, deciding their next policy move. Now, the markets heard all that data and snapped a 3-day winning streak. The Dow closed 100 points lower on Thursday, and Treasuries ticked up. Let's get back to Becky.
There was about a 10 basis point jump in the 10-year yield yesterday. Right now it's sitting at 4.27. The 2-year is at 4.68. And again, just looking at the hotter than expected producer prices for 2 months, hotter than expected consumer prices for 2 months. And it makes you wonder what you're going to see with inflation from here.
And price of Bitcoin, as we were talking about that before we came on, since it kind of never closes, so we never know where to base the change from.
Down,
that change does not tell you what's happening right now, because here's the range from yesterday, and I can look on Coinbase, where I always watch it. The high was 73,418.
Which we saw it at 73 in the morning.
The low earlier today, 65.5. So I'd quickly done some math with the calculator. That's $8,000. On a $73,000. So it was more than 10%. So once again, if you decide you want to tread into this, just be ready to buy it at 73 and wake up the next morning and see it at 65. And, you know, if they're not going to, the weird thing about it, gold and Bitcoin are supposed to go up when inflation, but when inflation is running, it means the Fed's not going to cut.
Right.
So they're not going to print.
It's a liquidity play.
So, right. So they're not going to print, and everybody wants the pivot in the easing cycle in June. I don't know. I wouldn't know.
Fed
would
futures.
You bet your life
Fed
on
futures.
A June cut?
No. Fed futures priced out to July yesterday.
Yeah.
But then we go back to this is an animal spirits kind of is the economy.
It's a million things. But it also ran up, right?
Well, it ran up because of the supply demand.
And because
that's an idiosyncratic issue, but more largely, don't you think it's a signal of just when people think the economy is great and people are super excited?
I don't think it's anything.
You think it has nothing to do with it?
Nothing to do with the economy being. I think it has a lot to do with the Biden economy in terms of printing money. But I don't think it has anything to do with. Why would a good,
I disagree because I think it's totally and utterly connected to the NASDAQ and to.
Well, it's a risk on. No one has ever said it's not a risk on, but it goes up when rates come down.
Yes.
And rates do not come down if the economy's strong. Rates only come down when the economy looks like it's weakening or inflation is easing.
If you looked at copper prices, I think copper prices yesterday were at 11-month high, and that's definitely an indication of global manufacturing, the economy, and what people are expecting.
But even the NASDAQ, if the NASDAQ is dying for rates to come down. Any risk on...
Totally.
In fact, the NASDAQ 100...
It's all perverse.
The NASDAQ 100 was down yesterday as well, and it is now on track for a second week in a row of losses, and that's the first time that's happened since October.
I mean, for any risk asset, what is better? A red hot economy, where you know rates are going up and they're not going to cut, or an economy where looks like we're going to need, inflation's going to moderate, rates are going to be able to be cut. That's usually what spurs the animal spurt.
Right.
But it's both. I mean, it's like everything we talk about. Jobs number. People are employed.
Why the initial knee-jerk reaction yesterday may have been that you saw stocks up, too. The futures were higher in the morning.
Right.
It took until later in the day before it turned around.
Rates have moved from, what, 4 back to 4.30?
Maybe it was 4.05. Yeah.
4.04 back to 4.30.
Yeah.
I don't think we're cutting. And Jamie Dimon went. But Jamie Dimon, they shouldn't cut because... That could cause a...
Can I ask a semi-political question then?
Yeah.
Then back...
I don't think it has anything to do with...
Because you just said the Biden administration. Back during the Trump administration.
Right.
Did you think the economy was terrible because rates were so low?
It was inflation. That's the age-old question.
Well, it was also
What causes rates?
No, I understand that. But do you see that?
Because
I think it's very hard to say, that was a great economy... Because rates were so low, and you're saying, well, the reason you have to bring rates low is because the economy is terrible.
The best thing in the world is good growth with no inflation. If you hit, it's all about inflation. And when you went to 40-year highs in inflation,
I know the inflation story. You're not good.
But the 40-year high in inflation is why we went up 500 basis points in rates. And you go into a cycle like that, and Bitcoin went from 65,000 all the way down.
But remember, it was also the global pandemic that changed everything. We're still trying to figure out how to get back to normal.
The Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions will come to order.
In a Senate committee hearing yesterday, Senator Bernie Sanders and fellow Democrats arguing their case for reducing the federal work week to 32 hours from 40 hours, so effectively a four-day work week. The bill calling for that four-day work week without any reduction in pay, citing advances in artificial intelligence and automation that they say would allow workers to cut back on hours and spend more time with family and on hobbies. What do you say, folks? What do you say?
He's got a soundbite, I think.
One of the issues that we have got to talk about is stress in this country. The fact that so many people are going to work exhausted, physically and mentally. And the fact that we have not changed the Fair Labor Standards Act. This was in 1940. We came up with a 40-hour work week. 1940. Who is going to deny that the economy has not fundamentally and radically changed over that period of time?
UAW President Sean Fain spoke at the hearing in favor of the bill, saying, many employees in the U.S. are working for less pay and can't retire until later in life. Republican lawmakers expressed opposition to the bill. Senator Bill Cassidy said it would harm small businesses, restaurants, and trades, which could lead to layoffs if businesses can't keep productivity up.
I mean, Bert, I wouldn't know where to start on this. I wouldn't want to live in a world without Bernie Sanders. From the land of Ben and Jerry's, I love it. It's the silliest thing that you've ever heard, is it not? You love the work. You know we need AI.
I do like a 7-day work.
I know
I like
you
an 11-day work week.
We need a 5 days. But, I mean, in this country, we try to have a really...
But we've already... What I was going to say is...
Strong economy.
For a lot of Americans...
It's 35 hours for...
Not all Americans, but a lot of Americans...
This sounds like shrinkflation.
We're already at a 4-day work week.
Well, we're also all at a 35-hour work week for decades for most of them, because they take an hour lunch break. Right. So you're talking about a 7-hour day.
But
when I started working,
but
it was
the truth
a
is, I think most people... It's funny. I mean, I think there's the idea that everyone's doing a four-day work week, that it's in the white-collar land because they're working from home and this and that and taking more time. But then the other truth is, you know, the folks working on a UPS truck or delivering your Amazon package, those folks are working 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day.
I get mail on Sundays, U.S. mail.
Correct. And what I will say is there is a separation. This is more of the inequality argument that comes in. If you are able to finagle a four-day work week or work from home one day a week versus the people who can't, there's a big difference between that, but that's also why minimum wage has come up pretty
substantially. It sounded like shrinkflation to me, too. Yeah. So you get the same amount of money, but you only work 32 hours.
Well, but there's also been advances. It is true. There have been remarkable productivity advances.
And we can only hope
it makes us more productive.
Right. But the advances that are there now in AI have been basically seen as shareholder gains, that productivity is going to come back in higher returns.
Well, we figured out the sewing machine. There were great advances, too. As well, there's always been great advances. I mean, this is different. This is transformative, but I don't think it warrants it. Bernie, what I love about Bernie is any night of the week you can see him on one of the late night shows.
I would argue.
Never see Ted Cruz on one of the late
night shows. I would argue in this case
he's
ahead of his time.
Never see Ted Cruz on one of the late night shows. But you see Bernie, they quote Stephen Colbert, Bernie Sanders, because they're all the same. They're all like minded. He's a socialist. He vacationed in Moscow on his honeymoon. He's crazy. He's crazy.
What he's describing is Wally.
30 years from now. 30 years from now, I suspect he will actually turn out to be closer to right than wrong.
We'll know in 30 years. You might finally be right.
I'm saying, I think he's a little early.
We'll know
how about
in 30
that?
Years and
I'm going to give him credit and say he's early.
You know what?
But
I will buy you
that
dinner.
That is the direction of travel.
I will buy you dinner in 30 years. I know people.
That is the direction of travel. And one of the things he's done, actually, over the years, which is very interesting, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I think it's actually true. What I call early anchoring.
It's putting down
he puts out these stakes about certain ideas that you and I may think are crazy in the moment.
And which has come true? Which one's been right?
Oh, goodness. Think about all of the different things that we've...
No, tell me what of Bernie's early anchors has turned out to be right. Not one.
Yeah, but what they're doing is
caricature.
What they do is move the midline. If you're talking about free student tuition, if you're talking about the idea of a wealth tax, all of those ideas.
Think about him.
Bernie Sanders is there to say,
let's have the discussion that never happens.
That's not true.
Think about all
the people who are working at fast food joints around the country now who are getting all sorts of benefits that they never got 30 years ago.
Is this because of Bernie?
Well, no, I'm saying I think that he has changed that dialogue.
I would give Howard Schultz a lot of credit, but I would say that
were child labor laws put in 100 years ago, long before he was born. I mean, we try to make work better, but I wouldn't tie anything to Bernie Sanders at this point, except he's kind of just to me, he just is funny.
A Bloomberg report says United Airlines is close to securing 36 or more Airbus jets from aircraft leasing companies as it looks to replace orders for the Boeing 737 MAX 10 that are at least 5 years behind schedule. That report says United is in final negotiations for the planes to be delivered between 2025 and 2027. CEO Scott Kirby said earlier this week that they were in the market for Airbus A321s but weren't willing to overpay. It's something Scott Kirby talked about the last time he was here, just the frustration with how late those Boeing planes are going to be. United is an all Boeing fleet. So the idea of adding any of these Airbuses is a pretty shocking and jolting one. It means that they will have to change some of their operations, have pilots who are able to fly on other planes. So it is a significant overhaul, and I would imagine it wouldn't stop with 10 planes.
Oh, and you're going to overpay. It's going to be like trying to buy a Wendy's single at noon. How much do you pay for that, right?
I haven't bought a Wendy's single in forever. Oh, the surge pricing is what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's going to be surge pricing. And people need jets. And you're not getting any.
No.
You're not getting any for a while.
No, because of all the problems with Boeing. This is a duopoly. There's two places to get them.
Remember when we had Scott Kirby on, and they never want to say, I would.
He was the most frustrated I had ever heard Scott Kirby.
Just looking at him, he's like, with what's happening at Boeing, we really might go to Airbus.
I'm disappointed that the manufacturing challenges do keep happening at Boeing. This isn't new. I'm disappointed in that.
Well, because the problem being they're not going to be able to expand their schedule the way they had planned to if they can't get the planes.
There's flights you can't get right now. I'm hearing about it.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, disruption in the creator economy. Mark D'Amelio, father of TikTok's second most followed creator, Charlie D'Amelio, discusses how they're diversifying their income streams to protect business if TikTok gets banned.
Although TikTok is probably the biggest platform for us, we are on all the other platforms too.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This is Squawk Pod. It's divest or else for ByteDance owned TikTok. The House passed a bill onto the Senate threatening a ban of the beloved platform if Chinese owner doesn't divest its U.S. business. Former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said on our show just yesterday that he might buy it with a team of investors.
I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses.
You can hear the rest of that conversation on your Squawk Pod feed. Our interview with Steven Mnuchin is but a scroll away. Speaking of scrolls, TikTok has appealed to its users to help lobby against Congress's bill. And for creators who rely on the platform for their businesses, it is a lot more than having a favorite place to scroll. Some of the creators are prepared. For them, social media companies come and go, and they've diversified their revenue streams to hedge against a TikTok ban. One of those top creators joined our TV show this morning. Here's Andrew.
Joining us right now is the father of two of the most lucrative TikTok stars out there. Mark D'Amelio is here, and he's the co-founder of D'Amelio Brands. And you've made much of your empire on the platform that is TikTok. So what's going on inside the D'Amelio family as you're watching all of this play out?
I think it's interesting. Like, Charlie texted me the other day. She's like, is TikTok getting banned? And we went through this before over a year ago where we knew early on that with what happened with Vine that we would, because we're in social media, we would need to diversify, which we've done. So we're although TikTok is probably the biggest platform for us, we are on all the other platforms too.
And so, I mean, just as looking at how this plays out, how important is it for you? And are you thinking, okay, I got to transition even more to these other platforms? Do you say, I got to call Steven Mnuchin and try to get in on buying TikTok?
Yeah,
be just part of that group. What's the thought process here?
I'm open. If Steve Mnuchin wants to call me, I'd love to talk with him about it. But we're in a very fortunate position. Our run with TikTok's been great. I do not want to see it get banned, but it could happen. And if it does, we're already planning.
Do you think it's a national security threat? I mean, you've spent a lot of time on you probably thought about this maybe even more than most Americans.
I mean, it starts to get outside of the realm of what I do every day. I haven't seen any evidence, not that I would, but I haven't seen any evidence that it is a national security threat. I think it is probably one of the biggest platforms for free speech that I've ever seen happen. And to me, that is very important. Probably the people that have been able to build careers and get their message out there. I can hold up a phone right now and I have 10 million people that potentially could see what I have to say, and it could, so that is really important.
What's the difference in your mind between TikTok as a platform versus Instagram as a platform versus YouTube Shorts as a platform? Meaning, how do you think about it? As you've said to yourself, okay, I'm gonna diversify, what do each of the platforms bring you that is potentially different, or do they all feel very similar to you?
I mean, I think both TikTok, both Instagram and YouTube have tried to mimic TikTok. I think TikTok was lightning in a bottle. I mean, it still speaks to me. Whatever my interests are, it comes to my For You page, and it's been.
And you think you think that algorithm is better, for example, than what you're getting on these other platforms?
It has been, yeah. It just seems to know you, and I think that's why everyone just loves to scroll on it.
What about, I mean, you've created now a whole number of direct-to-consumer businesses and a number of brands that now you're wholesaling as well. In terms of marketing, in terms of actually a platform that's selling product for you, is there one? Is TikTok the one that still is it? Maybe because the numbers are just so big, but from an effectiveness perspective, you say, okay, one does better than the other for me?
I think Instagram shopping, TikTok was fairly new on the shopping side. Instagram's been great. It's one click. My daughter Dixie buys she's just one click shopping.
Same. I buy a ton of stuff on Instagram.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. So they're both good.
And in terms of being able to port over the users, being able to promote sort of the brand and the empire, if you're on TikTok now and you're saying to yourself, okay, I got, 6 months from now, this may not be here anymore, what do you need to do? And are they the same users? I mean, how easy is it to say, hey guys, meet me over at Instagram, or is it a totally different situation? And then how do you do it?
I don't think it's totally different, but I think I find myself on X more than other platforms.
X you think is working?
For me personally, for my news, for my interests. And
right. Do your daughters use X too?
Not as much. They probably are more on TikTok and Instagram.
Porting the whole family though over, can you do it? I mean, do you think you can ever get the same kind of, because you were sort of both early in TikTok, and there was that lightning in a bottle kind of moment, can you get the same kind of volume of folks following you on these other platforms now than you could before? And I think a lot of people who live on TikTok today are thinking, am I late to the game if I haven't actually joined these other things or I haven't really spent enough energy on it?
It will be difficult, our numbers on the other platforms, but there's other creators like Mr. Beast is way bigger, right. Although he's probably top 10 or top 5 on TikTok, he's huge on YouTube. So we just have to diversify, and we have been, and there's always gonna be other apps that come out after this.
What's the top product you're selling right now?
So we have two products. One is D'Amelio Footwear, which is a women's footwear brand. And we have Be Happy Snacks, which is a snack brand.
Be Happy's blowing up in a big way.
Walmart is doing really well, and we're opening up 7-Elevens and Albertsons will be launched in May.
It's good stuff. Mark, thank you for coming.
Thanks, Andrew.
Appreciate it. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, Saudi Arabia shaking things up in tennis. Coco Gauff, tennis coach and former pro player Brad Gilbert says the Saudi sports washing strategy might just be the billion-dollar alarm clock for the sport.
We've been talking about this for 40 years. We've been talking about doing things in tennis since I was playing, since I had hair back in the day, and nothing has ever gotten done.
We'll be right back.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. It's like 60 degrees out there. Nice day yesterday. I'm Joe Kanin. It's a Friday.
I did not bring a coat today.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
No, I usually don't anyway. I'm like JFK. Along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Reports that Saudi Arabia may invest $1 billion or more in professional tennis, raising the question about the future of the sport. It echoes how professional golf has been trying to deal with Saudi competition in money. And joining us now, former pro tennis player, current coach Brad Gilbert. He joins us from Indian Wells, California. That's where it's all happening this week. He's coaching the number 3 women's player in the world, Coco Gauff. He used to win ugly. You got a book called that, don't you, Brad?
I do, Joe. Good morning.
We're going to try really hard to pull some opinions out of him because he's usually it's very difficult to get you to ever weigh in on anything. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, obviously this week, a couple of days ago, the big kind of surprise announcement that Andre Gaudenzi, the CEO of the ATP, has reached an agreement with Saudi backing for a new potential tour for 26. Also, the Grand Slams, the four big tournaments, are also working on a new tour. So potentially for 26, there are two new tours coming. And this kind of started, Joe, 3 years ago. Novak Djokovic formed a union called PTPA, and he was trying to bring together a new tour, which nothing has happened. And obviously, with the Saudis, with the LIV Tour, what they've done in Formula One, there is definitely something going. But tennis has been totally lacking for where golf has gone. Prize money, we're in a 14-day tournament here, Joe, at Indian Wells. This is the biggest non-Grand Slam tournament there is. There'll be over 600,000 fans for the 2 weeks. The winner gets $1 million. Last week, the Bay Hill Golf Tournament, 3 years ago, the prize money winner got $1.6 million. Now, because of LIV, the winner got $4 million. So it is absolutely driven up the price of PGA, and you've missing half the players. So hopefully the players, whatever happens, if it becomes a new Premier Tour, the new Saudi Tour, the players stand to get a huge windfall and much needed.
It's not going to be without controversy, I guess, BG, with because it's the Saudis again in sports washing. But what I guess we miscalculated, but we're seeing it in media, we're seeing it with streaming, we're seeing how everything works. Man, live events, you can't DVR them, you can't skip through ads. They're the most valuable content that's created. So everything was in golf, obviously, that what people were making was totally lowballed, and someone else was making all that money. Same with tennis. So now, would you therefore say that this is a good thing, even though it's the Saudis?
Well, it's a good thing that we're getting the ball rolling. A couple of things that are definitely need to be addressed. Both tours, the CEOs, the ATP and the WTA, it doesn't work like this in professional sports, that the CEO represents the players and the tournament. So that is a direct conflict of interest, that the CEO represents both sides. That is just a massive conflict of interest. And the biggest difference between golf and tennis, Joe, is every weekend when there's a major golf tournament, especially on the PGA Tour, it's on network television. So right now, this tournament has an exclusive in the States only on Tennis Channel, so which doesn't have a massive cable subscription. It's a good channel, but they don't pay any TV rights to be on right now. So that's something in the near future that needs to happen. Tennis needs to be at big term, especially in Indian Wells, Miami next week, needs to be on major networks to take tennis to the next level where it deserves to be, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. We've had parody. Billie Jean brought us parody long ago, but the parody is, nobody's getting paid what they probably should, men or women in tennis.
Well, one thing's for sure. Obviously, the top players are doing well. But the big thing that golf has dramatically changed is the number 100 player. You know, 10 years ago in tennis, we were making similar money. Now the number 100 player in golf is making more than the number 10 player in tennis. So sometimes competition isn't good. Sometimes competition is great. So hopefully, besides this one Saudi offer with the ATP and WTA, that now the Grand Slams are going to say, you know what? We don't want this to happen. We're going to get our own tour and try to get you on board. But I honestly believe, Becky, we've been talking about this for 40 years. We've been talking about doing things in tennis since I was playing, since I had hair back in the day. And nothing has ever gotten done. I had hair back in the day. Never like Joe, but I had decent hair.
Well, I can send you to the right place if you want this.
No, I'm no hair club guy. I'm honest.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You'd have to go to God. We talked about God earlier. Go
Brad, what do you think of like the sort of zeitgeisty, I don't know if it's even in the zeitgeist anymore, that there was a view that Saudi was in a penalty box of sorts around human rights issues and other things. This was brought up, obviously, even by Jay when it came to golf in terms of why they were trying to push LIV away. ATP may be different. I mean, they're based in London, and it's a very global and international sport. Do people care? Does that matter? Are we overstating this issue? Are we understating this issue? How players are going to think about it? How the audience is going to think about it?
You're not going to, Andrew, you're not going to please everybody on this decision. There's going to be some people that are totally against it. But this is a player's decision, what they're going to decide, how they're going to move forward. And they're taking the money, doing it in boxing, UFC, Formula One, golf has done it. And listen, if they don't have this offer right now from Saudi Arabia, maybe this doesn't wake up the Grand Slams or wake up the other tournaments to get something going. So,
Brad, this is really interesting, though. I mean, you're really just looking at this as the competitive spark and, hey, set up and pay attention and somebody start paying these players what they're worth.
I totally think so, Becky, because I think the players right now, in my humble opinion, are completely getting the short end of the stick. And if we get a same offer from the Grand Slams to do the tour, I would say go with the Grand Slams because they already control the four biggest tournaments, and that would make the most sense. So yeah. I am extremely hopeful that the Grand Slams now are, they're calling their tour potentially the premier tour. So to me, there's probably no room for two tours. So hopefully they will figure something out and the players will get the windfall. And Becky, one thing to keep in mind, women's tennis is by far the biggest women's sport in the world. There's not even like of the top 10 highest female earners in sports, I believe 9 of them are tennis players. So tennis definitely has all the eyes on the female side. Yeah. In men's tennis, it's a big sport, but nothing like, you know, some of the other team sports. But I'm extremely hopeful this will get, you know, people going and make some.
Yeah, this is leverage.
There you go. Exactly what we need.
So you're with Coco. Are you able to calmly watch her matches? Have you been able to achieve some type of zen where, knowing you as I know you, where I watch you and I can't even take, I have to turn off the TV and not watch, watching you watch the people you coach. Are you better yet? Is there a drug? What's happening?
Is there a drug? Adrenaline? You know, Coco had a tough one last night. She got through. She plays the semis tonight against Maria Sakkari.
You got any fingernails at all?
Actually, you know what? I've not been biting, you know, because, you know, in the morning I focus on stocks in the morning. You know, get my, oh, you know, I grind on stock. Of course.
Bitcoin. Okay.
What's Bitcoin?
Bitcoin strategy.
I'm not a Bitcoin guy, but I understand it totally because, listen, everything is supply and demand. If people aren't interested, they're not buying or selling, then, but the genius of Bitcoin is so easy. It's like that you can't get it anymore. So there's people buying and selling.
Your last big pitch, I told you no penny stocks. Don't say that, but your stock was Microsoft, wasn't it? You're a genius.
I've been Microsoft now for 10 years, and I'm telling you, the banks are like if you park your money in the banks, you've lost your mind. To me, Microsoft is the modern bank. You get a nice dividend, could be better. I wish it was. And you actually have a chance for growth. So I tell my kids this, listen, park your money where you have a chance for growth. Microsoft, and now with AI and everything they're doing, I think to me is a genius company. And if whether or not you're young or old, park your money there. I've had a little bit of dumb luck, I must admit, with NVIDIA the last year. And I won't call it a penny stock by any means, but I have a big position in On Holding, and we got smoked the other day on earnings. That's Roger Federer backed. Do you have On Cloud sneakers yet?
No, I don't know that one, and I'm going to have to check the price to see if you violated any of our agreements.
It's a $12 billion company.
Okay, all right, that's good. Okay,
that's not a violation.
I was going to ask you what you've been telling Coco. Can you give it? Is there a life lesson you can tell us about winning? Or I don't know. You were winning ugly. That's all I know.
So
that's what I tried.
I told Coco yesterday. I mean, she struggled with her serve massively yesterday, and I don't know of any player that could have got through besides her yesterday. She's a tough cookie. She's incredibly resilient, and she just competes. And the thing about tennis is when you're struggling, you got no teammates. And it's about finding a way to manage yourself, Joe, when you're not playing at your best.
Well, that's you.
I try to do that with everybody I coach, and hopefully they have more talent than me.
All right, we got to go. Brad, good luck. Good luck to Coco. You're in a great part of the country, too. I love Indian Wells. Good to have you on instead of once a year for the U.S. Open. Good to see you.
I will see you at the U.S. Open. Nice to have me on in March.
Right. Enjoy myself. Okay, see ya.
That's the podcast for today and for the week. Thank you for tuning in. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. Before you go, enjoy your weekend. Do us a favor. If you like what you hear, send this podcast to a friend. Give us a follow and keep coming back to Squawk Pod wherever you listen. We'll meet you right back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Saturday, CNBC is your ticket to the annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting. Watch live on air or stream all the action at CNBC.com. Warren Buffett meets with shareholders, plus their questions, his answers. Becky Quick and Mike Santoli with full coverage from Omaha. Then re-rack the energy with highlights Monday morning starting on Squawk Box. The annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting, live on air and online, starts 9:30 Eastern, Saturday, CNBC.